All right.
You just took a picture. Okay. There we go. Okay. All right. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. So, Bereshus Rav Orli and Shlita. The topic for today is to talk about tzedakah from a rabbi's perspective. Meaning, a lot of times when a person is a shul rabbi, you're entrusted with a charity fund, with a tzedakah fund, and there are halachos that govern how you're supposed to spend that money. It's not just your money to spend however you'd like or to give wherever you'd like. There are halachos, and there are also values in general that need to be kept in mind, and there are also just like best practices that need to be kept in mind when a person is running a tzedakah fund. In addition to just a regular tzedakah fund that a rabbi might have, which, you know, people in general assume is like, I can tell you, someone who's a rabbi in the Five Towns area, people assume that the tzedakah fund is like loaded with millions of dollars, and that I have, you know, access to, that I could print money, and, you know, it's a couple of thousand dollars, and, you know, I'm writing $72 checks most of the time. I don't know, in Shari Tefila maybe it's different. I used to write the tzedakah checks in Shari Tefila, and it was like $54 for an organization and $36 for an individual. That was pretty much my instructions at that time. But we'll talk a little bit about governing that. But what happens also more frequently, I don't want to say more frequently, but happens somewhat frequently, is that there is a particular collection a rabbi might take up, that they know of a particular tzorich in the neighborhood. There's a family that's struggling to get by, and now they have to make a chasna. Now they have to make Pesach, and you take up a collection, and you can, you know, tens of thousands of dollars can come in like that. You know, when you do something, when you're in a neighborhood where there are people that are interested in giving, they're interested in any ircha. There's a couple, you know, families that have trouble with tuition, and you already worked with the school to try to get the tuition numbers down, but they can only go so far, and the family mamish has zero. So they have six kids in school, and the tuition should be whatever, $120,000, and the school is willing to charge $10,000 because the family has nothing. But the family doesn't have $10,000 either. So you send an email to 10 people, and you say, look, I need $10,000 to help the local family. Here's the situation. And in my experience, when it comes to these kinds of things, usually within 5 minutes, the money is there. It's an amazing Mikam Chisrael kind of thing. But you also have situations where sometimes you have more money than you actually needed, and which is a great, great blessing, but it's also a headache, because what do you do when you have more money than you actually need? You took up a collection for a particular cause, and then it turns out that it either didn't cost as much as you thought it would cost. I had a situation where we tried to raise money for a special needs child that needed certain medical equipment that for whatever reason insurance didn't cover, and people that definitely spoke to people, and like immediately the money was raised, and we thought it would cost $6,000 for the equipment. It only cost $5,000 for the equipment. Now what do I do with the extra $1,000? I still need the $5,000. I can't just give it all back. Do you give it back proportionally? Do you keep it for other needs for that family? So all of these things are issues that come up. And again, Rabbi Orlin, I assume that you, right? These are not unique to me, right? These are... So let's maybe just give a little bit of an introduction. We'll talk about the concept of being a gabai tzedakah, and then we'll talk about who the money should go to, and then we'll talk a little bit about accountability, and then maybe we'll talk about what do you do when there's extra, which again is a bracha that we should all have. I mean, the ideal bracha would be that in our communities we shouldn't have so many needs. But when there's extra, you know, Chazal have an expression, "Ein akomitz masbia sa'ari." Right? The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos that when David HaMelech would meet with his advisors on a regular basis, and they would go through the economic problems that they were facing, so he would say, "So lechem esparnasu zumizu, let them go and get parnasa one from the other. Let the richer support the poorer, and they'll get parnasa that way." So he said, "Ein akomitz masbia sa'ari. How many rich Jews are there already? There's only so much money, it's not going to be enough to fill the needs. The needs are just so great." So that's when they decided to go to Milchama. They were they had Nimlach Bur and Betumim. They had to see if they can go out to Milchama Sarvashos in order to be able to improve the financial economic situation in Eretz Yisrael. So sometimes that is the case, that Enochum is supposed to be a Syrian. Sometimes it's the opposite, thank God. Sometimes you have a response that's overwhelming to a particular tzorch. But let's save that part to the end. So just we'll start with a little bit of an introduction. And feel free to interrupt at any time with questions, comments, ha'aros. Tell me if I'm wrong about something, you know, anything like that. And certainly, Rabbi Orlean, if you wouldn't mind, I would appreciate if you'd correct me and add ha'aros, because you probably have more. You're in Lawrence. You probably have more experience with this than I do. Distributing tzedakah is one of those things that we're not usually really trained to do. Meaning, Rabban in most Micha programs, you know, you learn Yerdei, you learn Nida, you learn a little bit of Shabbos, you learn, you know, we're not really trained to figure out how to be a Gabbai Tzedakah. And it's an area of Halacha that usually, you know, that other than this hour and change that we have together, or however long this will be, not committing, we don't really cover it in the Smicha program. But it's something that is something that almost every rabbi has to be involved in to be a gabbai tzedakah. Anyone who's in shul rabbanus, and by the way, often mechanchim have to be involved. I had a situation where I had a talmid in DRS many years ago, and his parents were not so frum. He ended up in DRS, however, he ended up there. But his parents were not particularly religious. It was a geferlicha situation in the house. One of his parents was very, very ill, and the other one was suffering with the consequences of that illness. It was just a really, really, really difficult situation. And the kid was getting frum. He was getting very serious about learning and about shmiras mitzvos. And he came over to me one day and he said, "I want to get my tefillin checked. I want to make sure that my tefillin are nice. I don't know if, you know, I want to make sure that they're kosher at least." So he had no idea what that means, you know, what a nice pair of tefillin is, not a nice pair of tefillin. I knew as soon as he said it that any reasonable sofer I'm going to bring his tefillin to, I'm probably going to say that it's possible. Probably going to say it's not salvageable. Because not because I knew anything about his tefillin. Just, you know, I know the way that people buy tefillin when they're not so frum. They go into a Judaica store and they're like, "Yeah, I have the black boxes," and, you know, and they'll just buy. "Oh, what do they cost?" "Well, this one cost, $2,000. This one cost $1,000. This one cost $300. They look the same to me. I'll take the $300 one, you know? So that's often the way that people buy these things. So I took him to a sofer, but first I raised the money to buy a new tefillin. And sure enough, the sofer said that it's possible. We were able to get him a new pair of tefillin. But as a mechanech, you have to be involved in that. And you have to say that, so we made up a maisa. We said that there's a special tefillin fund that the menahel has that, for guys that find psulim in their tefillin that someone contributed to, there's someone who really loves tefillin contributed to this, because he wasn't going to take any tzedakah from us, you know, but there was no money, there was nowhere else that it was going to come from. So you have to be involved in these things regardless of where you are in Klei Kodesh. And if you're in, some other profession, then certainly you're involved on the giving end also. Not that you're not involved on the giving end as a Rav also, meaning it's not, you're not only giving other people's money, you should give your own money also. Right? Rav Schachter often comments, and he doesn't do it to brag, he does it to set an example, that he gives way more than 20% of his money for tzedakah. Nusach sometimes is, "I give about 50% of my money to tzedakah," which is against the halacha, right? You know, I'm not allowed to do that. But unless you're an usher muflag, so Rav Schachter says that he's an usher muflag, and that's why he's allowed to give 50% of his money to tzedakah. I used to say that before I started teaching here, I would say, like, "I don't know what YU pays, that he's an usher muflag." But now I do know what YU pays. Probably everyone's definition of usher muflag is a little bit different. But anyway, so distributing tzedakah, again, it's something that we're all going to be involved with on some level or another. And a couple of years ago, I brought in, maybe we should do that again, I brought in Rabbi David Greenblatt from and he presented on running a tzedakah fund. You must know him from the room. And he was great. The guys loved it. He was phenomenal. He distributes millions of dollars of tzedakah a year. And he's the son of Rav Nata Greenblatt, Zechzar Gavracha. And he lives in Lawrence, and he's an unbelievable person, unbelievable Baal Tzedakah, unbelievable person, and he runs this fund, this Tzedakah fund, and he really was an eye-opening thing. So maybe we could do that at some point also to bring him back. It was very eye-opening in terms of the needs, in terms of the considerations. Now, the rules, when you read it in Shulchan Aruch and you read through the sugyas, the rules seem simple. But it gets thornier when it comes down l'maisa. For example, it seems very simple to say aniyei ircha kodmin, that the aniyim of your own city come first. But what if the people in the ir acheres are much poorer and more desperate? Meaning, I have aniyei ircha in North Woodmere who don't have steady income, but the tzedakah money is being used to pay for the lease on the Honda Pilot, right? Meaning, and then there are aniyei ircha, which is something that maybe you need for that person, meaning they got the lease at a time where the lease was cheap and that was whatever, and now if you try to get a car and they need a car, you can't function without a car in the 5-10. You need to do carpools, you need to do so, but that's what it's going to be paying for. It's going to be paying for the lease on the Honda Pilot, whereas in other communities the tzedakah money is going to be paying to put food in people's mouths that will otherwise go to sleep hungry at night. So even to that extent, I can say so it gets a little more hairy, it gets a little more complicated than just following the simple rules. So the Gra has a comment, Rav Daniel Feldman writes in his Rav Feldman has several Hebrew Svarim and several English Svarim. So in one of his English Svarim, the right and the good. I think in that one, maybe not. Maybe it was in the second one about Chesed, not in the Lashon Hara one. Maybe it was the second one about Chesed. He quotes a gra of Lo Sikpotzes Yadcha, that you shouldn't close your hand when giving tzedakah. He says what the gra said, that when you close your hand, it looks like all the fingers are the same size, because when the fist is closed, you can't see the length of the fingers. They all line up exactly. They all look like they're exactly the same size. When you open it up, you see that it's not so, that the fingers each have different sizes. So you can learn halachos of what comes before what, and everything seems to fit nice and neatly. Everything seems to fit into place. But when you get into the details, when you get down in the weeds, not everything works out the way it should. It doesn't always play out in that way. The Hafla in Panim Yafos has a comment that really had a tremendous impact on a lot of the Chassam Sofer's tshuvas regarding Inyanei Tzedakah. Feldman points this out as well, that this rule is qualified. The rule of Aniyei Ircha Kodmin is qualified, that it only applies when the needs are equivalent. That if all else is equal, similar to you have the Mishnah in the end of the first parak of Horios, that Kohen called them Levi, Levi called them Yisrael, right? So I once had a Shaila, someone called me up and he said that he, a guy, it was, I don't know how much to digress and tell stories, but a guy called me up and he told me that he used to drive an Uber for a living, and he was barely making it. And as he was driving around his neighborhood, he was trying to think of a business idea. He wanted to start a business. So he came up with an idea of doing insulation for attics in people's homes. I don't know what made him think of that. He lives in a warm climate. It doesn't even seem like something that makes much sense to do. And he started this business, and a year later, he's mamish making millions of dollars. The business is like taking off like crazy. And he feels this tremendous hakaras hatov to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so he wants to do something good. So he said, what should he do? So he first decided he's going to give tzedakah. So he gives chomesh nechasav to tzedakah. Phenomenal. Great. And then he said, I have more hakaras hatov than chomesh nechasav, but it's also to give more than chomesh nechasav. So he decided that as his business expands, instead of just hiring in the normal ways, he's going to go to all the rabbanim of all the shuls, of all the frum shuls in the neighborhood, and ask if there's anyone that needs a job, so that he can network that way to be able to provide people with parnasa. Unbelievable, right? So he did that. I still have more hakaras hatov to Ribbono Shel Olam. He's a Sephardi guy, right? Whatever. So, more connected to Hashem. So he said, I have more hakaras hatov to Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to save someone in a more profound way. I want to save someone's life. So he decided he wants to donate a kidney. And he had no idea how to do that. So he wanted to donate to a Jew. So he was going to go to Israel to donate a kidney to a Jew, because that's where the Jews are. And his plan was mamish to like march into Shari Tzedek one day and say, like, I'm here, like, take one, you know? Like, that was his plan. And someone told him, you know, you don't have to go to Israel. There are Jews in America, too, that need kidneys. There's even an organization for it called Renewal, and you can call it. So he called up, and he was like, really? I mean, he has a young family, he has little kids, and he lives on the West Coast. He was going to fly to Israel, donate a kidney, leave his family for 2 weeks, and just rent a hotel room while he was recuperating for a couple of weeks by himself. It's crazy. You can't do that. That's nuts. So he called. He was so excited to find out you could do this in America. So he called up Renewal, and they said, "Well, do you have any preferences?" And he's like, "What do you mean? I prefer to donate a kidney." They're like, "No. Do you have any like preferences of who it goes to? Do you want to give it dafka to to a from person, to a not from person, dafka to a child, dafka to someone under a certain age? Do you want dafka kain gadol? I don't know, whatever. Who do you want to save?" So he thought that's Shaila. So he called me up and he asked, like, "Do we apply kohen kodem Levi, Levi kodem Yisrael?" So most of the poskim that I spoke to about that Shaila said there is such a din of kohen kodem Levi, which normally you can't implement, like in any hospital setting, you're not going to be able to implement that, right? It shut down the hospital, it would be Chil Hashem and Eva and everything, it would be awful, right? But in this kind of setting, you can, because no one's expecting. You could donate a kidney to nobody or to whoever you want to donate one to, right? Doesn't make it. So in this setting, you really have the opportunity to do that. Most of the poskim I spoke to said, yeah, but there's no Kohen Kodem Levi if the Levi needs it more than the Kohen. Meaning, the Kohen's going to be on dialysis in another 3 months if he doesn't get a kidney. The Levi's been on dialysis for 2 years. He's much more deathly ill. So then the Levi is called him the Kohen, meaning when the needs are the same, that's when we have these Kadima rules. But when the needs are not the same, says the Afla, Afla doesn't say it in the context of life-saving, he talks about it in the context of tzedakah, but in the context of saving a person's life, Ramesh as a tshuva, he says the same thing, that it assumes all the questions of triage and who comes before who is all assuming that the needs are exactly the same, that everything else is equal. But when other things aren't equal, then certainly you give to the greater need first. So if you're in a town that Aniyim are pretty okay, and in another town they're in terrible condition, so you give to the other town. Kiya b'cha evyon. First b'cha, which is your family, then evyon, which is the greatest need, and then aniye yircha, says the Afla. That it's b'cha, take care of yourself, and then evyonim, and only then do you go to aniye yircha, do you give to aniye yircha. But those were that are the greatest needs. And that influenced a lot of the Chassam Sofer's Jews. Chassam Sofer, of course, was a Talmud of the Hafla. He was a Talmud of two great Rebbeim, of Rav Nassim Adler and the Hafla. So the rabbi's fund, that a shul rabbi has is a partial fulfillment of having a kupa shel tzedakah b'chol ir v'ir, right? Meaning one of the takanos that one of the communal infrastructure things that we're supposed to have are melamdei tinokos b'chol ir v'ir. That was the takanos Rabbi Shua ben Gamla, to make sure that there are melamdei tinokos everywhere. You have a beis haknesses, you have a mikveh. There are certain things that are communal infrastructure things, and we're supposed to have a kupa shel tzedakah b'chol ir v'ir. There should be a tzedakah fund or a tamchoi, a place where people can, a soup kitchen, somewhere where people can go get a meal, where poor people can go get a meal in every city. So Rav Shachter often points out that you have, in many mitzvahs, you have Chovas HaYachid and Chovas HaTzibur, that there are two components to the mitzvah. There's the individual chiyuv, and then there's the tzibur's chiyuv, and both are important, meaning it's not like there's a mitzvah of tzedakah. No, there's two elements of tzedakah. I, as a person who earns a paycheck, have to give tzedakah, and that's X amount of money. But I could give all the tzedakah I want, but the community has an obligation to have a communal infrastructure of tzedakah. You have this in a few different, in several different mitzvahs. You have nicham avelim, right? Someone is Rachman al-Son, someone is sitting shiva, so you go and you're menachim the avel.
But why then, if I'm going to go be Menachem Avil during the week, why then when we're at the cemetery, when we're at the funeral, are we omid Beshura and the Avelim walk through and we say Amakom Menachem, and you only do that if there's a minyan? Because that's a Chovas HaTzibur. That's the community's obligation of Nicham Avelim. Sometimes you have a Chovas, it's the same mitzvah, but there's a communal obligation in the mitzvah and there's an individual obligation. You have a mitzvah to teach your child or to pay your kids' tuition. There's a communal obligation to make sure there's a yeshiva. And that's whether you have kids or you don't have kids. It's the community's obligation to make sure that there's Malam Ditinokas B'chol Yer V'Yer. So this is a fulfillment. The Rabbi's Tzedakah Fund is a fulfillment of that communal obligation, that a Jewish town or a Jewish community needs a mechanism through which to distribute tzedakah. And this often is the mechanism. It may not, though, have the exact same rules as regular tzedakah of where to give the money if the expectations of people are different. Meaning much of what you're allowed to do with money is governed by the expectation of the people that put the money into that fund. For example, you may not be allowed to buy someone tefillin with tzedakah money, but people assume that the rabbi will do that at his discretion if someone needs a pair of tefillin with a discretionary fund. The rule that we just mentioned, that very poor people in another town take precedence over less poor people in your town, probably does not apply to the rabbi's discretionary fund. Meaning, the way it's set up, very often legally, when they set up the documents for it, they'll set it up as a fund for which to distribute charity within the community for those in need. And that's why it's a local fund. And it happens to be that there are people that come from outside the community sometimes, typically on a Sunday night, Mincha Maariv, you know, where there will be a line of like 20 people that are all coming to collect tzedakah. This one lives in Eretz Yisrael, and that one lives in Brooklyn, and that one, you know, from all over the place, and that's fine, but that's not going to be the priority of that fund, because that's not the understanding of the way the fund is set up. So even though we have dinim of what to do with tzedakah, that's when it comes to your own money. When it comes to the communal money, it has to be based on what the communal expectations are, particularly of the people that contribute to the fund. A rabbi sometimes the rabbi himself needs tzedakah, and certainly there's nothing wrong with the rabbi being supported by tzedakah, but not with his own discretionary fund, right? That would be a terrible, terrible idea for him to support himself unless he has explicit permission of the people, preferably in writing, because you have to be totally, totally above any suspicion, like the Mishnah in Shkalim about the Kohen that was Torah Mesalishcha, that he couldn't even have a hem in his garments because people would be choshed that he was hiding some money in there. You have to be completely, completely, completely above any suspicion. And as with most things, the more clearly the rules and the intentions are spelled out in advance, the less you run into trouble later on. Right, meaning if it's like everything is vague and it's just some people throw money at you here and there, and it's like, okay, I do it. This seems okay, this seems right. And then people start questioning and you can't really defend because you're not really sure what it was really meant for. Much, much better to have everything set up clearly in advance of exactly what types of needs it's supposed to go for, what the criteria are, how much checking you're expected to do before you start writing checks. It could be that, you know, I know whatever you call it, tzedakah fund, a check for $72 I could write without doing much checking. They come with a letter, I have a 2-second conversation, 2-minute conversation, I could write a $72 check. A $720 check, that I can't. That I need to do a lot more research, and I run it by a board of two or three people before I write thousands of dollars of, you know, before I write checks in the thousands of dollars. Typically, there's nothing in between. You know, usually I'm either writing checks for $5,000, with major needs, or $72 to the chevra that comes on Sunday night, you know, to collect for whatever their kiruv program in Bnei Brak or something. So that's typically the way it works. I know you're thinking kiruv and Bnei Brak. That's where they need kiruv. Yeah, we're being mekayev to modern orthodoxy. We have a YU kol over there. So gabay tzedakah. So rabbi, in a sense, is a gabay tzedakah, and generally, that's a very great privilege. You know, gadol hamaasa yoser mina osa. It's a greater zechus to facilitate sometimes than to even be the person that does it. And many people have no idea where to give their money. They want to give. People want to give. Rabbi Penner always says that when raising money for the yeshiva, like he always says that he used to think of it as like it's so hard to ask people for money. He says that I realize after a certain time, I'm doing them a favor. They want to know what to do with their money, and I'm giving them a great cause to support, a great cause to use them. And it's true. I can't tell you how many times where there was a need, and I reach out to a few people and ask, you know, I inform them of the need and ask if they're able to help out. Usually the response is, thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this. Meaning they want to do something meaningful with their money. They want to do something that, and they want to get, they don't want to just, you know, put it somewhere, just in the next envelope that comes in the mail, or the next, you know, person next. They want to know that it's going to something significant. So it's a gadol ma'asi yoser min ha'osa. I will say, don't let it get to your head, because when, let's say, before Yantif, so there's a guy in the neighborhood that calls me up before Yantif, every single Yantif. He'll send me a text a couple of weeks before Yantif, you know, before each Yantif season. If there's a family in the neighborhood, or several families, now he says, if there are multiple families that need clothing, shoes, whatever, for Yantif, that the kids should feel like they have new clothing, they have nice clothing, let me know. And what he does is, he calls up the clothing store, he gives them his credit card number, and he says, someone's going to be coming in on Tuesday, they're going to say, Rabbi Leibowitz, right, they're going to say my name, and when they do that, just whatever the family buys, put on this credit card number. So he remains totally anonymous. The people that are receiving it have no idea where they're getting it from. They just know that they go in and they say Rabbi Leibowitz. So their natural reaction is to call me up and thank me. Wow, that's so nice of you. I didn't pay a penny. I didn't make a phone call. I didn't do anything. All I did is made a shidduch, because I knew that there was someone in need, and I knew that there was someone who really needed to give, who really wanted to give, and wanted to help somebody. But so you can't let that. You have to remind yourself, like, I mamish didn't do anything. Like, you got it, because the people will sometimes have so much hakaras hatov, and they have nowhere to deliver that hakaras hatov. So you're the recipient of that hakaras hatov. So knowing that they have people, knowing that they have a rav that they could trust to distribute appropriately, that's a very great chesed, and they'll often, very often, I find, thank you for the opportunity. The trustworthiness of the gabbai is critical. The Torah writes that the gabbai tzedakah have to be chachamim, nevonim, uneemanim. So I understand chachamim, they have to know the halacha, right? They have to know what the dina kedima are. They have to know what's considered tzedakah, what's not considered. Okay, it's mistaver. Ne'emanim, they need to be trustworthy. I get that also. That's probably a top criteria. What's nevonim? Because judgment is critical also. That when it comes, like we said, things don't always fit neatly. And sometimes a person has to use judgment in terms of determining where the greater need is, figuring out what can be solved without, without using this money, but using maybe other means to help them. What's going to be a long-term need and what's going to be a short-term need? You know, I once had a situation where someone was very desperate for money, and the person asked. For help, and I just called up someone, a Rav, who would be familiar with the situation to make sure that it was a real need. He said, it is a real need. It is also a bottomless pit. He just wanted me to know that this is not going to be the last time the person is going to ask. So you have to know what you're getting into, and that's not a reason not to help. Adrabah, the person needs to get by today, and they're going to need to get by tomorrow. But you have to use your judgment in terms of how much money can be allocated toward one thing, even if the needs are very great. Meaning, at the end of the day, if the people, you know, the board of your shul says, why did 90% of the money go to this one family in Far Rockaway, and 10% of the money stayed in North Woodmere? It was because it's a bottomless pit, and they just kept needing and needing. You have to use judgment about what's, you know, what the big picture, what's gonna make the most sense for your fund. There's also this great sense of responsibility for the community that a person should have, and that a Rav in particular should have. Rav Shimon in Hakdamat Shari Yosha very famously writes that on the Mishnah, Mein ani li mi li ukshani latzmi ma'ani, that as humans we need to worry about ourselves first. Chayecha kodim, like Rabbi Kiva walking in the desert with the water. But we get to define what ani means. Is ani just me? Is ani just is me and my family? Is ani me and my community? So yeah, I need to worry about me first. But kshani lats me, says Rav Shimon. If my me, Rav Shimon's yotzei today, yesterday, Rav Shimon's yotzei. I think so. So kshani lats me. If me means only me, and that, then I'm a nobody. Then ma ani. That's a famous maysa with the Panovich Rav and the Yaldi Tehran, that the Panovich Rav called everyone in Bnei Brak to a meeting. They didn't have enough pillows for the kids in the orphanage, and the Panovich Rav said that everyone should bring their covers and the blankets, their pillows, and the people were poor. They themselves barely had anything, and he said, you know, that the halacha is the Gemara in Kiddushin, darshan's from the Psukim, that if you have an eved, you got to give it, and you have only one pillow, you give your pillow to your eved. What about chayach hakodim? He said, because how could you fall asleep at night knowing that you haven't taken care of the people who are under your responsibility? So as Panovich Rav said, all these yiddish kapelach aren't going to have a place to put their head at night. They're not going to have a pillow to put their heads on. So it's chayecha. It's chayecha kodmin. You're not going to be able to sleep. I imagine no one's going to be able to sleep knowing that these yiddish kapelach don't have a place to put their head at night. This is something we have to feel that in a real way when people are going through things. We should carry that with us. Now, it's also important not to hold on to the money for too long. There is an isser called Bal Ta'acher in the Torah that's said in the context of Karbanos, that actually came with today's daf, but there's an isser that you're not allowed to commit to do something, such as bringing a karban, and then delay three regalim. So it seems that it may also relate to tzedakah as well, that there's an isser Bal Ta'acher by tzedakah as well. It seems like a stira, because in Rosh Hashanah Daf Dalid, tzedakah is listed with the other mitzvahs that require shalosh regalim in order to violate Bal Ta'acher. But in Rosh Hashanah Daf Vav, Rava says that you chayv right away when poor people are there to right away give the tzedakah, so that it's not three regalim, it's immediate. So Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah Daf Dalid writes that when there are no aniyim present, meaning you know you have to give meiser or chomesh or whatever it is, so you have a tzedakah fund. 10% goes into that fund. So there are no aniyim present, so make sure you empty your tzedakah fund every, that it's rolling, that never that money doesn't stay in there for more than three regalim. But when there's an ani b'fanecha, when there's an ani right in front of you, so then it's Bal Ta'acher to make him wait at all. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. He alludes to the Mishnah Berurah, but he writes in Avos Chesed more explicitly that when you have aniyim or guests at your Shabbos table, that don't sing Shalom Aleichem and Eishes Chayil before the meal. They're hungry. They're waiting to eat. As the Chafetz Chaim writes, that if even though the halacha is on the first night of Sukkot, if it's raining, you're supposed to wait till Chatzos, you're supposed to wait till midnight. I think Poskim or Mekel, if you know that the forecast is that it's not going to stop raining, then you don't have to wait till midnight. But he said, you don't know the forecast, so you should wait till midnight. But if you have aniyim that are eating at your house, so it's Bal Ta'acher. You have to, it's an isser. You have to feed them right away. So you should, the Chafetz Chaim would sing Shalom Aleichem and Eishes Chayil during the Suda. Because if you had aniyim at the house, there's Bal Ta'acher when the aniyim are in front of you. That doesn't mean that the that as someone who's running a tzedakah fund and as someone who's a rav of a shul, that everything has to stop when an ani shows up. Meaning you're in the middle of saying a shir or davening, and an ani wants your attention. He doesn't. There can be times you can make office hours where you could do that, because otherwise your life could become unmanageable, it could become unlivable. So it is fair to do that, to set times where you're able to meet with people. The Rashba writes that really you immediately, when the Gemara, to be miyashiv this stira between three regalim versus immediate daf dalet and daf vav, so the Rashba writes that you immediately violate the essay of Motzos Sasecha Tishmor, that whatever you say you have to do. But Bal Ta'acher takes three regalim. To violate the Los Asay takes three regalim. The Ran says differently. Anything not Mikdash related violates Bal Ta'acher immediately. When the Bryce says Gimel Regalim, it means regardless of the type of violation. But then it's bal ta'acher for everything. It's bal ta'acher with three regalim. Mikdash related things, maybe it's only right away. So the Shulchan Aruch and some Rashi and Zayin Sif Gimel says that you have to give right away if there are poor people present. If you give directly to the poor people, but if you give to a gabbai, then you could wait for him to ask. You don't have to give as soon as the money is available to you to give right away. So there is a difference between ani lefanecha and when there's no ani lefanecha. But generally speaking, people would be unhappy to know that there's just tens of thousands of dollars, let's say, sitting in an account that you haven't done anything with. Of course, you don't distribute it all immediately every time, because that's also irresponsible. You have to, if you know that a need is going to come up over time. So by distributing everything today, I'm going to not be equipped to deal with the need that's coming up. You know, Pesach is coming in a month from now, and you know, I always have that. I talked to David Cohn, not Rav David Cohn from Brooklyn, not David Cohn from North Lunar. There's a big Gabbai Tzedakah in Eretz Yisrael by the name of David Cohen. You know David Leib Cohen?
Yeah.
So he deals with the neediest people, and he takes nothing. Like, it's all, every dollar, every penny goes to tzedakah. You ever go on a little tour with him, he'll take you to apartments where they don't have a refrigerator, they don't have mamish, people who have nothing. And he'll always remind me after Purim, after we give, I send Matanos Levyona money, he'll always say, the need is much greater for Pesach than it is for Purim. How much money do people need for Purim already? Pesach is a much greater need. So Chachmein of Barosha, look, Matanos Avionim is Matanos Avionim. It's Mitzvah Siyom. You're not allowed to wait. It's got to be distributed on Purim. But sometimes you have to be mindful of what's going to be coming up. I was asked a Shaila a couple of years ago. There's a guy in Los Angeles who a dentist who had developed a product for fresh breath, some new dental hygiene product, and he took the company from nothing. Like, he was a dentist and he gave up his practice. He believed in this product, and like at a certain point, from what I was told, he had to sell his house because, you know, it takes a while till you build up and you actually make money, and he had to sell his house and move in with his parents. As everyone else told him, he's crazy. How do you give up a dental practice for this crazy dream of trying to build this company? Well, Lemaisa, he sold the company about a year and a half ago, I think, and after taxes, he made $495 million. So he now had $50 million. So his family now, his son and son-in-law, were in the business, and they now have $50 million of Maisa money to distribute. So the Shaila was, do they have to distribute $50 million of Maisa money today? You know, or this year? Bal ta'acher. You know, it's going to be a violation of Bal ta'acher if they don't distribute the money. So one could make it happen to be Rav David Cohn from Brooklyn thought yes. He had a whole political reason. He said, the Democrats are going to be in power and the money's not going to be worth anything and this and that. He had like a whole cheshbon at the time. But whatever it was, but pashtus is that that you don't have to distribute it that quickly because it's irresponsible. I can distribute 50. When you have that kind of money to give to tzedakah, the responsible thing is to set up a foundation and to have people that know how to distribute it properly. So you put all the money in a tzedakah, in a charitable whatever. My wife would know better, she's an accountant, a charitable trust or fund or whatever, and a foundation, and then that charitable foundation will take care of whatever it's meant to take care of over time. And, you know, investing tzedakah money is also very tricky. Pashtus says you're not allowed to do it, even if it's fairly low risk. Sometimes you have no choice. We had a situation where a young man died and he didn't have any life insurance, and his almana and child needed to be taken care of. So there was a communal fundraising effort and it raised, I don't know, $700,000, let's say. So what are you going to do with $700,000? It will take care of people for, I don't know, a few years, right? And then what? And then, like, meaning if that $700,000 remains just $700,000, and we're just distributing it to the family, to the wife and the children, as needed. So certainly in 5 years, she'll have $0. So what do you do? So first of all, you have to set up a trust anyway. So you set up a trust, but you're not allowed legally to set up a trust without investing. It's illegal. The trust has to have some investing. So it could be that in those situations, since that's the understanding of those who are giving, that it's going to be put in very... So I asked Rav Asher Weiss, and he said, very, very safe investments. You got to do very low risk, even though it's low reward also. You got to do very low risk investments. You can't, even if you diversify your portfolio, and therefore maybe, on average, it's going to have a better return rate. Very low risk. It's got to be very low risk. Not at all possible to be able to invest tzedakah money. Now, who should the money go to? So, any questions? Yeah.
Everybody giving money is perfectly okay with higher investments than less balance.
Yeah, even that's a problem. Because they may be perfectly okay with it, but this money is designated for tzedakah, so now you're being guzzled the aniyim. So you have to be very careful with that. So the way around it, by the way, is if you have someone who's willing to back it up. It's not so easy to find. But if you have someone who's willing to say, look, you have $700,000 to invest, if you lose $100,000, you can come to me, I'll write you a $100,000 check. So then it's zero risk. Meaning then you've mitigated all the risk. So that you could do. Sometimes you have a person who's willing to do that, you know, if but it's not easy to find.
But that one's own tzedakah money, is my tzedakah.
Yeah, so also you have to, yeah. I mean, you can invest your own money before you designate it as tzedakah money, and then give tzedakah from the proceeds, certainly. But just invest tzedakah money is not so passion.
You could just give it all to her, and she could.
So you have to know, very important, you have to know that even people who are very well-meaning and very sincere and very needy don't always know how to handle money. Meaning there are a lot of people that need money, but they don't know how to handle it. There's a fellow that comes around collecting sometimes. I taught his son in yeshiva years ago, and he definitely needs. I don't know if he will fall out of his pocket on the way out of my house. Like, meaning, that's an exaggeration, but I don't know where that money's going to end up. I don't know that he knows how to make sure that it ends up being used properly. So what I do for him is I get him food gift cards at supermarkets. So he can go to the supermarket, and I know that at least that way he's getting food with it, and he's getting, you know, that he's not spending it on something silly. Because a lot of times people don't know. They just don't know how to spend money. They don't know how to save money. They don't know. So you have to, part of taking care of people is doing something that they can manage. It's important. Important to sometimes get a financial advisor to talk to people. One of the great things that Achiezer does, Achiezer is our local, I think other communities have it also, but in the Five Towns, Far Rockaway community, Achiezer is like the clearinghouse of all chesed, you know, sort of in the community. And one of the things that they do, one of the services that they do, is that they'll have a financial advisor meet with people in terms of how to make a budget, how to live within a budget, not only for poor people, young couples that are getting married for the first time. They, you know, they see a paycheck and they have no idea what to do with it. So they sit down with, I've sent many Talmidim there, and they love it. It's great. Now they know. I had a Talmud, he finished graduate school, now he's making $80,000 a year. He thinks he's the richest guy in the world. He's making $80,000 a year. He's never made that. So until he realizes it doesn't pay the bills. So, you know, so he sits down with that, and then they tell him, no, this should be able to pay your bills for you, your wife, and your one child, and your rented apartment. This should be able to pay your bills. You just have to know how to, you know, and they go through. They go through how to be financially responsible. But a lot of people who need, have no experience with money, so they're not financially, not, I don't want to say irresponsible, it's not a nice word, but they just don't know how to handle money. So you can't just give, you raise $700,000, the people that are giving are assuming that it's going to be dealt with responsibly. Giving $700,000 to a person who never handled money before is grossly irresponsible. Anything else before we go on? Okay, so who should the money go to? So there are two types of needs. There are acute situations. A person lost his job but is likely to get a new job, so he just needs to be held over for a few months. A major medical expense, something like that. Someone's, a local Rebbe or whatever, making a chasana, who is on a, or lavdafka Rebbe, someone's on a a salary that that is limited and makes it paycheck to paycheck, but now all of a sudden is making a chasna and you can't do paycheck to paycheck. And we're not talking about like making this exorbitantly expensive chasna, just a chasna, any level chasna, it costs money. Then there are bottomless pit kinds of meats where there's no light at the end of the tunnel and you're not sure you're even making a dent. There is a concept called makire kuhuna, where people would give to a kohen who's a friend, and then it creates a chiyuv to give to him. Tosfos Bava Metzia says that if you tell somebody that you want to give him something small, you have to give it to him because he relies that you won't change your mind, as opposed to something big, where he assumes that you will change your mind. So truma is like a matana muetas, that he assumes you're not going to change your mind, and that's the yisod of makire kuhuna, that since he assumes that he can rely on that money, because you've been giving it to him, so some posts can say that such a concept applies by tzedakah as well. That if you've been giving someone, food gift cards every yontif for a couple of years, you have to make sure that you get food gift cards for that person every yontif because he comes to rely on it, reasonably rely on it. I have such a situation. I didn't realize when I started giving it to him. I just have had some people that would. There's one person I still don't know who it is. Every yontif, before yontif, I don't even know how he gets into the shul. Shul is locked at night, and I come into the shul in the morning, whatever, before the daf yomi. I'm usually the first one in the shul, and on my shtender there's a sealed envelope with five gourmet glatt gift cards with a note, please distribute to people who need. So I do. I try to distribute to people who need. Sometimes it's gift cards to a toy store before Hanukkah, things like that, to try to make sure that people are taken care of. It's, again, very inspiring that people are total mutton to say, sir, I don't even know who the person is. So there was one particular person, I had these gift cards, so I started giving him gift cards. Now he comes before every yontif, do you have gift cards for me? And sometimes I've already distributed those gift cards. I didn't think of him. He wasn't in front of me at the moment. He doesn't really live in the neighborhood. He lives in a different neighborhood, but I gave. So now it's my responsibility to make sure that I have gift cards for that person, because it could be that you have such a din of makirei kuhuna. Now, in terms of prioritizing, generally speaking, in Hilchos Tzedakah, relatives come before anybody else. The Sefer Chassidim says that if you give others before you give your needy relatives, so Sefer Chassidim writes in Tavkuf Lamed that you're going to become an ani yourself. Obviously not a good thing. So it's obviously, though, that's only when you're giving your private money. When you're giving public money, you're not allowed to favor your relatives, right? Meaning if you're running a rabbi's charity account, you don't say, yeah, but my brother or my sister or whatever needs money. Some people can say to give those who don't have wealthy relatives priority over those who do, meaning you also have to take into account who has other means of support and who has no other options. And sometimes, since there is a din of krovim coming first, let the krovim handle it, meaning put a little pressure on the krovim. Sometimes you'll have a situation where there's a need, and you, as a rav, as I was talking about before, using judgment. I could write the person a $10,000 check because they need $10,000 to educate their children, even though the tuition bill should have been $120,000 or whatever, but they're giving $10,000, but they have no money. Or I can call the rich brother who just spent $3 million redoing his house and say, can you please support your nieces and nephews for $10,000? In a nice way, obviously, but I'm about to write a check from a charity account for your nieces and nephews. And usually that will break their heart. Sometimes people are clueless. Their own siblings are starving and they don't even realize it. And you just have to clue them in sometimes and say, look, they need some help. And that's use a little bit of, so it's okay to apply a little bit of pressure on relatives in those situations. Shulchan Aruch says, tzaddikim come before regular people. So if Cook writes in one of his shuvas, it's difficult to evaluate who's a tzaddik nowadays. Not so easy. You can't always evaluate based on the length of the beard, how big a tzaddik is. I don't know. I got a call yesterday from someone. They said, we want to do a feature on you for social media, for non-Frum and non-Jewish people, to introduce them to different interesting Jewish people, Frum people. I said, okay, but why me? I'm not so interesting. Nothing I do is interesting to non-Jews, I don't think, right? So they said, no, we want to be able to show that there's such a thing as a rabbi without a beard. I'm like, oh, we should have a conversation. there's a slight update. You know? So you give to a tzaddik first, but it's not so easy to measure someone's tzitzis. In Tshuvas B'Tzala Chachmar, B'Tzala Stern writes that that's really only for public funds. If it's private funds, then if we were to do that with everybody's tzedakah, then the meritorious would get everything. You know, tzaddik would get everything. So when it comes to public funds, you prioritize tzaddikim. So a person comes and you start talking to him and learning, and you see that he's a Talmud Chacham and that he's a Rish Kailul or whatever, this and that, and he has a need, he has a sick child or whatever, that does take precedence over someone who's not necessarily great in learning. At the same time, also be mindful of the fact that if he's very slick and very personable and very, you know, then it could be that he'll have an easier time collecting from other places. Whereas a person who's just broken and unable to communicate effectively and maybe doesn't know social graces will probably have a harder time collecting from other places. So as much as like you feel like right away, oh, we have a sprach, and everyone feels that sprach with that person, so maybe there should be some correction involved. Again, nivonim, you gotta have some sense of nivonim. People who can't work, the Ritva writes, according to Shita Kuvetzes and Kesubas Tav Samach Zayin, that somebody who could be working comes after somebody who can't work. Also not always easy to judge, and doesn't apply in a life-threatening situation, but if the recipient knows that he can work, then he shouldn't take the money. A friend of mine told me that there was a guy going around the shul collecting, and he asked the guy, you know, you seem like an able-bodied person, I can get you a job, I have connections, you know, I'll get you. The guy's like, yeah, what kind of job? And he described to him whatever, a blue-collar job that he would get him. He said, nah, I make just as much money collecting, I only have to work a few hours a day, you know, like going around collecting. Like, that's not okay. Meaning if a person has the ability to work and is able-bodied, and is, so they shouldn't rely on collecting. Aniye Eretz Yisrael is also a kedima. The Chassam Sofer says that it relates to Kedusha, and therefore Yerushalayim would come before other parts of Eretz Yisrael. It may also be a function of the second possibility of why Aniye Eretz Yisrael may not be about Kedusha, it may be a function of Aniye Ircha, that Eretz Yisrael is everybody's land. It's all of Klal Yisrael's land. It belongs to Klal Yisrael, right? Like the Ran and Darim, but not paying taxes. But we don't pass like that, Ran and Darim, Legabe that. But, you know, Legabe feeling that sense of connectedness to Eretz Yisrael. And third, maybe it's because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, like the Avnei Nezer. The Abnezer, that living there is only Yishuv Eretz Yisrael if you contribute to the economy there. So maybe it's a partial Yishuv Eretz Yisrael when you contribute to people who are contributing to the economy there to be able to live there. Right, by Shemitah, the way B'nai Chutz La'aretz observe Shemitah is we support farmers in Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's always been the way we observe Shemitah, by being mechazik those who are doing these mitzvahs, Hatzlius Baretz. I remember right before the Shemitah year, there was a lot of things going around. You could buy 1 square foot of land in Eretz Yisrael for $500, and then you'll be yotzei the mitzvah of Shemitah, Shvisas Karka during Shemitah. So should you do that or not, to buy that square foot of someone's living room in Netanya or something, you know, like to be yotzei the mitzvah of Shemitah. So I asked Rav Asher Weiss, he said, I don't know, do you buy a donkey to be Yotzei Petar Chamor? So that was never the minhag. We don't buy donkeys to be Yotzei Petar Chamor. If you have the mitzvah, then you have the mitzvah. Otherwise, the way for the Jews have done this mitzvah forever has been by supporting the farmers in Eretz Yisrael. Some of that was supporting, meaning a lot of that was they just trying to come up with a fundraising chap to get people to support farmers, so they came up with selling of food. Or whatever, an Amma by an Amma in Eretz Yisrael. The Sfas Emes and Yerodea points out that the Torah leaves this chiyuv out of an Eretz Yisrael, because Torah must hold, Sfas Emes says, that it only applies with as much as Yisrael Shayekayim. I don't think we assume that way. Now, accountability of a tzedakah fund. Sometimes Balabatim want to be nice to the rabbi and show how much they respect him and how much they trust him. So they'll say, we're not going to require any oversight. Don't worry, we totally trust you, Rabbi. do not accept that. That is not okay. That is not okay. Don't let it happen. You should insist that there's somebody who oversees the account. There's somebody else. There are more eyes on that account than your own eyes. Somebody you consult with, preferably that you can consult with in writing, especially before distributing larger sums of money. It's nice that they want to respect you and show you that they love you and trust you. It's not a recipe for success. It's not a good idea. Plus, what do rabbis know about money? Sometimes you need to talk to people, and you need to. So it's good to have people who are people who have discretion, people who know how to be quiet about things, people who have experience with money, who you can talk to about how to, and you'll get a lot of good eitzah sometimes. And it's, I think, a very important thing. Shulchan Aruch writes this in Rishon Zayin Sif Beis, that an unpaid gabbai tzedakah does not have to give an accounting of the money. But then the Rama says, "Mikol makom, kedesh yu nekiyum Hashem Yisrael." Tov lahem litein cheshbon, that it's still a good idea to give a cheshbon, even if technically you're not obligated to. The Shach and Sifkat and Gimel points out that even that should be done with discretion. There are certain things that you spend money on that not everybody should know what the money is being spent on, but there should be people who are tznuim who are aware. You don't need too many cooks in the kitchen. You don't need everybody questioning every dollar that goes out of the tzedakah account. Oh, you're giving tzedakah money to that person? I saw them buy a coffee in Starbucks the other day. How can you give tzedakah to that person if they could spend $3 or $4 on a cup of coffee? You don't want that level of of people looking, and you have a couple of people who are tznuim that you could talk to. Yeah.
If one is like a rabbi of a shul, who would that person be?
I'm sorry?
Who would that person be that's appointed?
So I have a couple of people that used to be board members of the shul that are the tzedakah people in the shul that I go to it's two people, plus the treasurer obviously has to know money coming in and out, so that changes, but I don't really consult with the treasurer so much. He's just aware of what's going on in the account. But anything in writing, anything that's going to be more than $100 or $108, whatever, is going to be, I run by a couple of people in writing, in an email. It's not always so posh. Sometimes you think it's a no-brainer. Of course you should give to this cause. But they tell you, no, the charity account is really set up for this kind of need and not that kind of need. Meaning it's a relative of someone in the shul who needs a surgery and they live... But, the charity account is set up where little things, as people come, you can give, but generally it's supposed to support the community. So, there was one case where I wasn't allowed to. They said, we can get in trouble. You're not allowed to give a $10,000 check to, even though I was able to raise the money, that our shul account can't be the go-between. A lot of times someone will call me from somewhere else. They'll say, I live in Eretz Yisrael, I'm raising money for this tzorech, for a particular tzorech. I'm going to raise all the money. I just need a 501c3. So can people use your shul's charity account? Can we funnel it through your shul's charity account? So why not? Of course you can, right? But you talk to the people who know, and they say, no, you can't do that. We're not set up for that. That's illegal for us to do that. So you have to know what you are and are not allowed to do. And a rabbi doesn't know that unless you happen to have been an accounting major who actually paid attention. Pasha. You do have accountability to the donors, but only insofar as that you have to use the money properly. Once the donor is given, he doesn't have the right to direct the money where he sees fit. Legally, by the way, also, typically in these charity accounts, that he can't say, I'm giving $1,000 dafka because I want it to go there. A lot of times when I raise money for a particular cause, I'll always write the check for $1,000 more than it was raised for. Than was raised for that, or $1,000 less than was raised for, because the understanding of the account, the way it's legally set up, is that you're not allowed to earmark the money, that it has to be to my discretion. So I can't have it match exactly. The donor can't direct the money. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Reish and Aleph and Sif Hey, Mishnas and Mammon Legabayim Litzdaka, Ein Lo Velo Liyorshav Shum Koach Behem, Vakal Yasa Atov Beine Lekim Vadam. That he doesn't have any koach once it's given. Before he gives, he could say that he's only giving the money for particular causes, and that again happens often, but you have to make sure that that's legal, like I just said. Sometimes it's not legal, and you have to tell him, I'm not going to give the exact amount. right? I had a case, a guy in my shul is a person of means. He has a brother who has a million kids, doesn't make any money, and he wanted to help his brother make a chasna. He wanted to help his brother, so which is a great thing to do. So he wanted to funnel the money through the shul's account, you know, to help his brother make. I know the brother. The brother needs the money. He doesn't have anything. He needs the money to make the chasna. So can you funnel this? I asked. They said you can't have it legally. You can't have him direct the money, you know, exactly. So we could change the numbers a little bit. I could say, look, you're going to be giving Hachnasas Kala money, and some of it will go to your brother, and some of it's going to go to other Hachnasas Kala, you know, needs. And that's fine, apparently, legally, based on what I was told. But again, you have to consult with the people who actually know. Yeah.
He was trying to, like, save money on taxes.
What?
He was trying to save money on taxes.
Yeah, meaning, obviously, meaning if he's just writing a check to his brother, then it's not a charity when he does his taxes, right? It would be from his meiser cheshbon, he's fine, but from a tax perspective, he'd be in trouble. Sometimes issues that come up is,
Didn't Trump get rid of all the tax breaks for
charity? I don't think so. I think there's still benefits. Yeah, I think there's still benefits to giving charity. Yeah, I don't know. Now, sometimes the need is not as great as you thought, and you have to manage that. Like sometimes you're giving someone tzedakah money because they tell you, I'm not making anything, and you see that they're not making anything, and you help them out, and then it turns out they have a couple $1 million in a retirement fund. And a lot of people that are giving don't have a couple of $1 million in a retirement fund. Now, you understand the person's under great stress. They're 35, 40 years old, and they're not making any money. So if they dip into their retirement fund, it means they're not going to have anything left. They're going to use it up in short order. Yeah, but you got to tell me that, right? That's why when schools do tuition assistance forms, you have to disclose all of that. You have to disclose any money that you have. They have anywhere in order for them to be able to assess that properly. And you also, just in general, when helping people with tuitions, which is a common thing that people do, to sort of come to an understanding or an assessment of what exactly is the school's responsibility versus the shul's responsibility. And it's good for a shul rav to have a good relationship with the executive directors of the different yeshivas in the community. You know, not just the one that your kids go to, but with all the yeshivas in the community, it's a good idea to have a relationship with, because you need someone to negotiate with, you need someone to talk to, someone who will appreciate. You know, I've had many conversations with executive directors of different schools, and you know, just to figure out how are we going to make this work for a family. And those are good relationships to have, important relationships to have. And just one final issue. I mentioned at the beginning, which is sometimes you overcollect, right? Meaning you're trying to meet a particular need, and then there's extra money from the fundraising. So there is a lot of discussion in the poskim about that topic in general, about overcollecting. But there's a Mishnah says that Moser Shavuyim LaShavuy, Moser Shavuy LaOso Shavuy, Moser Aniyim LaAniyim, Moser Ani LaOso Ani. So if you have extra funds for Aniyim, so you give it to other Aniyim. But if something was collected for a particular Ani, then it's supposed to go dafka to that Ani and not to other people. So the Mishnah says, if you raise money for poor people of your town and you have extra money left over, so distribute it to other poor people who are not from your town. But if you raise money for a specific person and you raise more money than was needed, then you have to give to that person even more than he actually needs. So there are two reasons that are given for this. One is that because the collector is really acting as the shaliach of the ani, and it's as if the ani is cornered the money as soon as you collect that money for him, because you're acting as a shliach when it's for a particular person. And the second reason is that the poor person's name was used in fundraising. So since you've embarrassed him by using his name, he's sort of kona the money through that embarrassment. He's entitled to all the money that was raised by using his name. Nafkamina would be, what if you didn't use his name? A lot of times you'll say there is a person in the community, you know, again, I'll send out that email to whatever, 10, 15 people. There's a family in the community, they've come on hard times, this is the basic story, and you do it in a vague enough way that people aren't able to figure out who it is. So you didn't use the person's name. But the Mishnah is speaking about where the cause was relevant at the time, but extra money was raised. That's where we see that the money should be given to the person that you collected it for, or if it wasn't for a specific recipient, at least for a similar cause. But there's a Chumash on Rash that talks about where tzedakah was raised for causes that turn out to be irrelevant. He talks about a case where money was raised to be for pinyon shvuyim, and then they went to be pod of the shavui, and the shavui says, no, I've converted to Christianity, I'm living very happily with my captors, and I'm not interested in coming back to the Jewish community. So now you raise all this money for pinyon shvuyim and he's not even interested, so the whole issue is not even there. Or for the cases, the Shuvah Sarash speaks about a case where money was raised for the funeral of a deathly ill person, and then the guy had a refuah shleima. So now you have all this money for his funeral, but he's alive. So he ruined all the plans, right? he had a refuah shleima. So in those cases where the entire cause is irrelevant, the Rush says that you should give it back to the people who donated the money. You should track them back down and give it back to the people who donated the money. Not always easy to do. They had such a situation a couple of years ago. There was a little girl that needed a surgery that wasn't being covered by insurance, but at the same time that they were raising the money, they were also, you know, working on insurance solutions and legal solutions and things like that. And tons and thousands of people donated $18, $36, this, thousands of donations came in on the internet or whatever. And then, as it turned out, they got insurance to pay for it. Right? So the whole need became irrelevant. So pashtus is, in those cases, you have to give it back. So again, the better way to deal with it is to avoid that and say, look, this is going into the shul charity account. My intention is to use it, you know, when raising the money, my intention is to use it for this need. Should this be beyond, should we raise more than the actual need, or should the need turn out to be irrelevant? That would be the greatest thing in the world. If that's the case, then it's still going to be in the charity account. We'll use it for other important needs. Most people will still be okay giving, knowing that there's a need right now, and knowing that it's very hard to collect exactly the right amount of money, and then to figure out how to back out of that later on. So most people will be okay with it, but like most things in life, as long as you're planned in advance and you're cheshbon in advance and you formulate things and you make the agreements in advance, most things can be worked out. Okay, anything we didn't cover that I should have covered? Anything come to mind? I didn't really go through the outline that I sent you. I did sort of like different stuff. Because that outline, I realized afterwards, was more about personal tzedakah. So I didn't really, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. Yeah.
Should the Rav try to influence the priorities of this community for what tzedakah they're giving and which things they would be allowed to use the fund for?
Absolutely, I think. I think people need to, just like a Rav is supposed to educate about, you know, what the Gemara says and how to be Shomer Shabbos, and you should educate in terms of how to use tzedakah. And most people don't have an education in that at all. They have a basic education from communities in how to learn Gemara and how to keep Shabbos. They don't have an education in how to give tzedakah. A lot of times parents don't educate their children how to give tzedakah. It's a very important thing for parents to do also. First of all, your kids should see that you give tzedakah. A guy told me that he said, I'm sending my son over with a check. I said, but you just zelled me like $1,000 into the account. What are you sending your son over with a check? He said, yeah, my son doesn't see the zell going through, but he sees that I sent him over to your house with a check to give tzedakah. So it was for him. So he gave another couple hundred dollars that, you know. And that's also important that they should see. Meaning it's not showing off. It's not bragging, it's that kids should see that not all my money is for me. But the Kodesh Baruch Hu blesses me with money. It should be shared.
Based on the Rambam, giving someone a job would be like the best for the start. If someone offers you a job, they can that you can then give to someone in the shul. Is that like different parameters, or is that kind of the same thing?
That happens sometimes, by the way. It does happen. I've had that. Meaning, what do you mean different parameters? You try to make a shidduch. Obviously, if the person, you have to be honest with the boss, whether the person is going to be qualified, is trustworthy, all of those things. But if he has the qualities, just honestly give the assessment. This person doesn't know this malacha yet, but he can be easily taught. He's very conscientious or whatever. Just tell him the mitzvahs.
Different question.
Yeah.
In terms of the Rambam writing that it's better to give small amounts to change a person's midos.
Yeah.
For a practical perspective, for companies, for stock organizations now, if they get $18 checks, $118 checks, it takes time. It's annoying.
Right.
Is it better nowadays, perhaps, for people to pick a few stockers that are like the larger quantities,
right,
or to just follow the Rambam says and become more of a
right,
and give $118 checks instead of giving a few
stock as
a few hundred dollars?
Yeah, so it's hard to argue on the Rambam, but I mean, the Rambam writes in the Perushim Shai, Hakol Lefi Rov HaMaaseh, not Godel HaMaaseh. Sometimes you give tzedakah and you can give $10,000 and it's going to make a major impact on the person's life, or I can give $10 to 1,000 different people and they'll make a minor impact for a very short amount of time. So the Rambam says, yeah, but you have to keep in mind being mechanech yourself. It's one of the hardest things for people to give up of themselves, to give something that they feel is theirs. So the Rambam, with great insight, so the Chazal had the insight to realize that you need to constantly do it in order to train yourself to do it. Otherwise, it's very hard. If you only do it once in a while, you fall into a habit of not giving up. So I'll often tell a young couple when they get married and they're being supported by their parents, so technically they are the tzedakah, right? Meaning, how much can they give? So they can't give meiser yet. But I'll say, first of all, there is a din that aniyim have to give tzedakah also. So you do have to give some amount of tzedakah. But I'll always say, talk it over with your parents about if they're comfortable, even though you're being fully supported, if they're comfortable with you giving some small amount of money to tzedakah on a consistent basis, because you don't want to fall into a habit where you are not a giver. Because God willing, the reason you're being supported right now is because you're in graduate school, and that graduate school is going to pay dividends eventually. That's the plan, at least, right? Where you're going to make money one day, and you're still not going to be a giver because you will have fallen into the habit of not giving. I mean, the Rambam was right that it really trains a person. But I think even the Rambam would say that there is some balance over here, meaning, it's probably a great idea but there's a guy in my shul who comes to shul. He must have a stack of $105 bills that he comes to shul with. So as soon as the ani, or I think he gives 20s, and I think that's why they do this. As soon as the mishalachim come to shul, they all make a beeline right to him. They all line up right there, and then they go around. They get their dollar and their $5 from somebody else. But he gives $20 to everybody always. He's always giving. So that's Hakalafi Rov HaMaaseh. He's not giving $20,000 to everybody. He's giving $20 to everybody when he's making a big tzedakah donation. So, a person is, let's say a person is going to give $30,000 a year to tzedakah. Not so crazy. A lot of people give a lot more than that. But let's say a person will give $30,000 a year to tzedakah. So he can designate $2,000 to be given on a daily basis in shul, by $5 at a time. And that's an actual hand-to-hand giving. That's what the Rambam's talking about. And when the bigger contributions he may a balance. I think so. Yeah, it's when you're a little kid and you got a quarter or a nickel or a penny to put in the pushka, there was a reason for that, right? To train you. So it shouldn't be a quarter or a nickel or a penny anymore, right? Meaning that's zero, that's mamish, insulting, there's nothing anyone can do. One of the mishlachim that came to my shul said to me, I went to another shul, and I go to all around, and most shuls when I go, they'll give me $5, people will give $5 at a time, not $1 at a time. He said, I see here, people are giving $1, what am I supposed to do with $1? I said, that's fair, meaning when I was growing up, it was $1. So 30 years later, why are we still giving just $1 to the mishluch? We should give $5 at a time to the mishluch. No? I thought that's fair. So we should educate people about that too. But it would be a really great idea. I'm a big talker. I don't do it because I don't like it during the davening thing. I just find it so distracting during davening. And the Sefer Shlomo Zalman used to, in Shari Chassid, he felt that it's also the Ritva writes, also Mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah. My famous Kashin Rishonim tells us Ritva. Also Mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah. What's the Chiddush? Also Mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah, especially if it's Yefshu L'Kayim Shneihem. So of course you Pater Min HaMitzvah. What God wants you to be, to do the impossible? Obviously it's also Mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah. So the Ritva writes, no, it's to teach you that it's asr to do the second mitzvah, that it becomes asr. So Shlomo Zalman held the halacha that if you're in the middle of Kriya Shema, it's asr to give tzedakah in the middle of Kriya Shema. So what was his solution? Just close his eyes and pretend he didn't see the Mishlachim. No, he would line up shkalim on his shtender. So before davening, so he'd line them up so the anim would come by and they would take one, and he didn't have to actually disrupt his Kriya Shema. He was Rosh Hashanah, so he knew that none of the Mishlachim were going to come and just slide a holy, you know. But so you have to be careful about that also. Yeah.
If one's calling the fund like a kubas a year, like how can money then just be given to people coming collecting that live far away or in Brooklyn?
So if you have to, again, everything should be set up in advance. Meaning part of what the community needs to do is to support all these people who are going to be coming in. To a lesser extent, in our community at least, it's to a lesser extent. The bulk of the funds are meant to go for, look, if someone writes a check for $5,000 right before Yantif and says, I want to support families for Yantif, that money probably should not be used 3 months later to support a Kiruv program in Kiev. Yeah.
Let's say someone comes in for some like far off thing. How does that erupt? You're saying?
Part of the money is meant for that. I mean, the fund is meant also to take care of that.
Set up and the community knows that.
Mm-hmm. The community sees people, Aniyim, coming in. Right. Surely, no, they go there.
They see what I'm doing after Marav on Sunday night for a half hour, whatever.
Can I be generous, second question? Not a rabbi, really. How does a person decide, or like, is there any halachic preference for like, gosh mystical causes versus broken mystical causes? Because I always, like, I'm wondering, like, anytime I'm going to give money to yeshiva, I'm not going to like poor person like that. Like, how do you make that decision? Like, is there any halachic preference to give one or the other?
Yes, Shulchan Aruch talks about this, right? To support Talmud Torah and to have to look at it's in the order of priorities. It's in the order of priorities.
Talmud Torah first.
Pikuach Nefesh is probably first. I have here the whole list of priorities. one second. Meaning a lot of these things are not strictly speaking tzedakah. Tzedakah means to aniyim, but it could be the Shulchan Aruch quotes a day, for example, that shuls come before tzedakah. You know, so it could be certain most of those are a communal obligation that, you know, Meiser money could be used for it, and certainly it's tax exempt from a legal perspective, but it's not technically tzedakah. So Torah education, something like that, is a communal responsibility. So that's a discussion in the Achronim whether that's a greater responsibility than tzedakah. But again, everything in balance. It all looks nice over here, but then you got to figure it out. So I don't think all of the money should be given to aniyim. Some of the money should be given to. We need the most of us. We need shuls. We need yeshivas. Aniya Yerchar Shachter often points out also, just agav, even when it comes to most of us, the most of us of your city doesn't necessarily mean what is geographically close to you. Meaning, it often means what's close to your heart, right? So, if let's say, for example, I learned in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, my children learned in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a yeshiva in my community that I didn't learn in, my children didn't learn in, I never walked into their base medrash, not for any reason, just because there are other batei medrash that we could walk into. So my aniya yircha is going to be my yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be that which that which I'm most connected to. It just used to be that how would you ever be connected to something that wasn't within like a mile of your house? But nowadays we're very connected to things that are a great distance from us.
Maybe just mentioned not getting
tefillin,
purchase a tefillin, is that not considered tzedakah? Can't be
maaser. It's a good question. It's a good question. I mean, it could be that buying tashmishei mitzvah for somebody is not considered tzedakah, but pashtus is that it is. Pashtus is that it is. It's within reason also. I think Rav Shechter told us that when they do the food distributions for Pesach, why does it have to be hand shmurah? It's so expensive hand shmurah. Let it be machine shmurah. They need shmurah matzah. They need this. But you can buy so much more meat, so much more chicken, whatever, chicken and vegetables and other things that people need. If you know, you always have to. Rav Luchan Sinzchron Lebrach used to speak about this a lot, about how sometimes our priorities are out of whack. Meaning, and he used like the amount of money spent on certain chumras and kashrus, as opposed to, let's say, hospitals, as an example. Like, he has pikuach nefesh to support a hospital, but you're spending a lot of money to implement this chumra. So you have to be careful about that. But again, big people need to make these big decisions. I don't want anyone to be late to
Mishnah. Thank you very much. Thank you.